Double Tap.
This week on Double Tap, are we seeing the rebirth of retro?
What you would expect from back in the day when you used to play games like Head Over Heels, it was just simply getting from room to room with all these different challenges in each one. There's over 500 rooms to go through in this game.
It's certainly not a retro game, but in a funny way, it's the game that I want those older games to be.
Hello and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Ellis Taplin. Do you ever look back to the games you played in your childhood and think, they just don't make games like that anymore? If so, then you could be in luck, because classic games are finally making a comeback. Later in the show, we'll be taking a look around London's MCM Comic-Con to see what retro-style games we can find. But first, I spoke to Rudolf Kremers to find out how he's put a modern spin on the classic 2D Metroidvania genre, which borrows gameplay elements from the Metroid and Castlevania series, in his new game, Starlit Colony.
Starlit is... it works on a few levels. At first view, it's like a 2D Metroidvania-type game. The game is also, let's say, a bit of an ode to 60s, 70s sci-fi. You know, those great lurid sci-fi covers on books in the time. And where it comes from was that I always used to really like games that let you explore and play around with triggering creature infighting. You remember in if you ever played Doom or Quake, it was a valid tactic to make monsters fight each other. And I always thought that there's way more you can do with that. You can build a whole game around that, in fact. And this game does that a bit deeper than pretty much any other game that has similar mechanics. The other thing is it really does a lot with photography. The way you learn about how creatures and plants operate is you actually photograph them. And a successful photograph unlocks an entry in a big compendium that you have. It's like a super PDA. And if you photograph them in a certain state, then you will get a little entry unlocking that unlocks, that tells you quite strategic information about that creature in that state. So you're going around this game like a scientist rather than an action man or woman. You don't have a gun. You just have your camera and a fire extinguisher, and you have a jetpack and lots of interesting upgrades. And to some degree, you can use a few things as weapons, but it's really about exploration and experimentation.
And why did you decide to make it a 2D game? Like you said, it kind of has the 60s, 70s sci-fi look about it. So did that tie in?
It did tie in. There's a few reasons. One, it's simply as a tiny little indie studio, you know, what can you realistically achieve? And 3D is just a lot more work in terms of art. Not that this wasn't a lot of work. We worked on this for 6 years now. But 2D is just doable because the game is ridiculously ambitious. That's why it took 6 years. And the look really matters. So this lush sci-fi feel, I personally think, works really well in 2D. But there's also just, you know, there are gameplay reasons. With the kind of gameplay that you have here, it's really nice to just have a flat screen, a flat world that suggests depth. But in practice, you can quite easily start to figure out relationships between what you see on screen and figure out how to explore the world to find hidden rooms, or where to go to find some pickups, or just to observe how the creatures behave, which is really important for the photography. And the photography itself is just easier in 2D as well.
And because it's 2D, you're bringing kind of an older style of gameplay into kind of like a newer style, if that makes sense.
That's right. We still wanted it to be a very progressive game. It's certainly not a retro game. Far from it. It's actually quite an original game. I think it's more modern. It's quite forgiving. We set up the game so that everything you do, you get rewarded if you explore and experiment. Well, a lot of these retro games, and in fact a lot of Metroidvanias, are quite punishing. You know, it's all about hardcore fighting and platforming. And there's some of that in there if you want to do it. But everything has a whole range of solutions. And people will develop their own solutions to the problems that they see. And from that point of view, it's a much more modern game than other games that hark back to classic 2D games. So we try to mix it up. It does have a nostalgic and retro feel to it, at least in terms of atmosphere and visuals. But in a funny way, it's the game that I want those older games to be.
So do you think that that's something that might start, or we might start to see more of now, games that have almost a retro or nostalgic feel, but have been pulled into the modern era and have like more open world elements and more modern gameplay elements?
I think so, yeah. I think to some degree it's happening already because, you know, games can't help but get with the times to a degree. But what I really like is that we've had a really strong phase of nostalgia in the indie scene where people just were kind of remaking their own version of their favorite games. But that's kind of been done now. And it's, since people have really done that thing, they're starting to look at different ways to engage with similar graphics or with similar inspirations, but just do something a bit more original with it. And that's certainly something that I always find important with any game that I work on. But with this game, it feels extra important to me because I really care about this kind of big exploration game. A lot of these kinds of games used to be made by mid-sized studios, but a lot of those studios, they just don't exist anymore. They're really, they've gone to mobile, or they've become big studios or tiny indie teams. So I feel that we're not being served as well as we used to when it comes to games that grab something that looks well known, but do something a little bit more original with them. And that's one of the things we really are going for.
Is mobile quite a big competitor for indie developers now?
It's hard to say because the whole games market has grown so much. It's hard to say if the addition of mobile to it is actually real competition. There are way more channels than there used to be, but now there are also way more developers than there used to be. Personally, I don't dare to compete with 99 pence games. Even if you have a very good game, there's a good chance that you get drowned in all the in the sea of releases. So I try to focus my own games on what in mobile is called premium games. I don't even think of it that way. I just think of it as these are the big, chunky, meaty games that I want to make. Like Starlet is enormous. I reckon if you've never played the game before and you do a fairly run-of-the-mill play from start to finish, where you do some of the missions, some of the side content, some of the collecting, but certainly not all of it, it will be about 15 hours, which is nice. It's nice to be able to tell people that, look, you can spend some time and live in this world. Yes, it will probably be a more expensive game than a lot of stuff you get on mobile platforms, but, you know, that's the choice. Against that, I can guarantee, you know, there won't be any financial shakedowns. We won't be begging you for money while you're playing, or hit paywalls, or, you know, or change the mechanics to support capturing whales, you know, all the kind of stuff that happens on mobile. It's just not going to happen. It will be a fairly pure and deep experience.
And like you said, it's such a large game, and you also said it took you 6 years. What were some of the challenges, considering you are a smaller studio, of making the game?
Because you're so small, ultimately, anything goes wrong with that core group of people, 3-4 people, anything changes in their life circumstances, or they run out of money because this game is completely self-funded, anything that stops them from just working on it will have massive repercussions for everybody else as well. And that's not, you know, that's not a criticism. That is just the danger of having such a small team. So combine that with me writing an original game design, which was wildly, wildly optimistic in terms of scope and and size, and it turned into a project that was a bit stop-start. But having said that, I think there are pluses to that as well, which is that we had time to think about a lot of the mechanics, to iron out a lot of issues. And even though it took an enormously long time for things to come together, I think they have at least come together quite nicely.
Thanks to Rudolf for taking the time to talk to me. You can find out more about Starlet Colony by going to omni-labs.com. Now, here's this week's gaming news. Sega has announced that it has acquired Amplitude, developers of the Endless series. This marks another purchase of a studio that specialises in strategy games by the publisher. Nintendo has filed a patent for a new handheld device. It focuses on the speakers and vibration, stating that it will notify a person in three-dimensional virtual space, and also includes a number of images of the potential console. Sony has certified a new wireless adapter with the Federal Communications Commission. The company hasn't officially announced the device yet, although it has been speculated that it will allow the PlayStation 4's DualShock controllers to be used on PCs and other devices. And now for the esports. SK Gaming and Team X have both been disqualified from E-League. The decision came after the team's roster changes failed to comply with the league rules and means they won't be able to compete for the rest of the season. The Esports Integrity Coalition has launched in the UK. The organisation's purpose will be to address issues of cheating in esports, with a particular focus on match fixing and doping. Ian Smith was elected as the group's first ever commissioner. When it comes to conventions, it can be hard to find the perfect game on the show floor to satisfy your particular gaming needs. Luckily, our reporter Sean Allsop has taken the work out of it for you this time and has searched the gaming floor of London's MCM Comic-Con to find the best new retro game.
The MCM Comic-Con London 2016 show is a buzz, and right now, I'm exploring the gaming section. It's round, with long queues being the norm for just a 5-minute playthrough, so what's on offer? I wanted to find out if there was something in new game format for the retro gamer inside me. Luckily, I noticed one game store hiding in the back. Rising Star Games.
So this is 88 Heroes. It's basically a timed platformer, really, and you've got 88 heroes, and you've got to do all of them, each mission, each stage, 88 stages in. And it's basically this group of different heroes that are trying to save the day. It's a classic kind of platformer, really. And every single one of these heroes have a different power. So for example, there's a guy that's got a laser beam. There's another one that can, a girl that can flip a coin. And when she flips the coin, either she dies or you win the stage. So it's as simple as... So it's a, it's a really interesting way of... interesting mechanics there. It's a completely different kind of thing that we've normally done, and we're really interested in how people kind of react to it at MCM, really, and it seems to be doing quite well.
That sounds fantastic. A great load of variety. And with these characters, do you have the chance to select the characters, or are they randomly...
So basically how it works is you've got those 88 heroes, yeah, and they cycle through. So if one dies, because it's a very quick kind of dying, they count as your lives. So when they die, they're gone forever. So each time you go through a level, if you've passed that level, that person that you just played with and you got through the door goes to the back of the queue until you cycle through them again.
88 Heroes definitely brought back old memories of using the simple D-pad to jump from platform to platform. And with its massive range of characters and powers, makes this platformer more unique, more unpredictable, and more fun. Now onto the second title, Lumo. This beautiful isometric puzzle game lets you take control of a cute little wizard. With its design reminiscent of classic Dungeons & Dragons games, and just as challenging.
Yeah, so this is Lumo, and basically it's taking that old classic 80s vibe and bringing it into 2016.
I could definitely sense that with the background of being Dungeons and Wizards.
You're
playing as a very cartoonish wizard, and we just died there. I'm just trying to figure out, is it a platformer or a puzzle game?
Well, it's an isometric platform adventure. Yes, it has got... It's basically what you would expect from back in the day when you used to play games like Head Over Heels. Yeah. It was just simply getting from room to room with all these different challenges in each one. There's over 500 rooms to go through in this game. So it's not a simple game that you just pick up and throw away. It's got a lot of depth to it. There's so much kind of nostalgia. There's so much stuff going on in there. So many little love letters and things that kind of point you to the back in the 80s when games were kind of new and it was like a fresh frontier for games development. So there's a lot to kind of get a hold of here. There is no way that you can go through this without dying. This game is definitely one of those games.
Put it on the box.
Yeah. Well, no, I think I think people want a bit of a challenge now. There's been a lot of hand holding, and game development has been guilty of being a bit too accessible to an extent where you're actually not enjoying it. You're just kind of just going through the motions, really. Whereas this one, as much as you can die as much as you want infinitely, there will be something that will stop you.
Lumo had me scratching in my head more than a Sudoku. This is a surefire hit for puzzle fans out there, with hours of complex challenges to conquer. If your mind can handle it, that is. The last game on display had me shooting so many lasers on the screen, it looked like a giant fireworks display. The game in question? Assault Suit Leinos. This title has the graphics of a 16-bit classic, along with as much action as a Michael Bay feature film.
It was originally from the people that made Cybernators. It's been around for a while. This is nearly 20 years kind of history, a bit of heritage there. This is the same formula. It's just been brought up to date, so you can play it on your PS4. So as you can see, the visuals are very good. There's a lot more going on. It's not as clunky as the old school ones were, and very pixelated. It's all nice, fresh, lush artwork and backgrounds, and this play is so smooth. It's bloody hard, no joke. Yeah, it's hard as nails. And the thing is as well, it's like, we've wanted to keep it traditional Japanese style, so all the VO, all the voiceover stuff is all still Japanese. There's a lot of story in there that you wouldn't really notice until you kind of get into it. So when you kind of get it home, open it, put it in a box, out of the box, and put it in your machine, you realise that you've actually got a really solid game here that has been kind of really looked after by the developers themselves. Yeah, so this one's a bit different. Obviously, it's more grounded. So there are stages where you are flying around in space, but this one you're mostly... you're a ground-based kind of mech, and it kind of changes the way that you would think about kind of a bullet hell shooter. And where you would normally be able to kind of find corners, you're kind of limited to gravity. Gravity kind of keeps you down. There's a bit more of a challenge when it comes to kind of dodging those crazy bullet patterns that start coming at you. It's really, as I keep on saying, it's come from a traditional way of these platformers that they used to bring out in Japan, and kind of put a new, fresh twist on it. It's really interesting. Just when you thought it was over, it's like, no, what the heck is this thing? The challenge is actually staying alive. It's tough.
A classic game modified for modern consoles. Assault Suit Leinos is great for letting off steam by shooting as many robots and aliens as your heart so desires. So what did I take away from Comic-Con? Although first-person shooters are the AAA blockbusters that get all the attention, with developers like Rising Star Games, there is still plenty out there for the gamers of yesteryear. Still, give me Sonic or Mario any day.
Big thanks this week to Rudolf Kramers and the whole team at MCM Comic-Con. I'm Ellis Taplin, you've been listening to Double Tap, and I'll leave you now with my favourite nostalgia soundtrack. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production, presented by Alice Taplin and produced by Jamie Wareham.
Tap, tap. Double tap.